to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that is broadcast to you in glorious Technicolor. As you look at your screens right now and see our beautiful faces, you'll see the amazing array of multicolored decorations, accoutrement that I have around here. Obviously, you're all enjoying it very much. You give me a lot of compliments on my room, you know, on my setup here.
Hey, do you think the brothers from Sinners went and saw The Wizard of Oz in Technicolor?
That's a good question.
That was 1939. It was pretty close, right? When was that movie? When did they say? Well, they said it at the beginning of the movie. It was definitely in the late 30s, I think.
Wizard of Oz, I think, was later than that, actually. I just looked this up.
Wizard of Oz was very famously 1939. I know this one for a fact because I dropped out of film school.
Oh, look at the big brain movie guy over here.
Yeah.
Yes, 1939.
Wizard of Oz is one of those things that, like, dorks really like to argue about. Like, it's not actually technically, like, it's not the first movie in color.
I mean, it's not, but it was the first one that made a bunch of yokels.
Here's another one. Here's another dirt.
Well, I mean, if I can throw out another 1939 film. Hattie McDaniel was not allowed to go see Gone with the Wind. So does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
That's a true Hollywood story. Only a few years earlier, Fatty Arbuckle was standing trial. For all of his heinous crimes.
Mr. Arbuckle, how do you stand? Or how do you plead? Fat, sir.
It was the vampires, I swear to God. You wouldn't believe me. You wouldn't believe me. It was these goddamn Irish vampires.
Listen, obviously, we've both seen Sinners over the weekend. We thought it was great. We obviously now have a huge problem with Ireland. Sorry for the international tensions that are ramping up. That is partly our fault.
It's, you know, I don't blame the Irish. I blame the Mississippi Irish. It's like they said in Blues Brothers. Damn, I hate Mississippi Irish.
Oh, man. Oh, here's something. So, obviously, in celebration of the announcement that Studio David is coming out with JoJo Part 7, the anime. That's right. Steel Ball Run.
Okay.
We're all very excited about that. We're all very excited.
America.
Yeah.
Speaking of old timey America.
Speaking of old timey America.
Where there's one Native American character who shows up early on and then kind of disappears as the story goes along.
And, you know, plays as a plot device to the blonde, blue eyed protagonist.
Yeah. Well, I guess JoJo is blonde in that arc.
Mm-hmm. JoJo is the Dio who's blonde. No, JoJo's blonde.
Well, Dio is always blonde.
They're both blonde.
Speaking of blonde European vampires who suck. Fucking suck. Dork-ass fucking...
Sinners, but it's Dio.
He would have to be so arch. I mean, he was pretty arch in the movie, but... If Dio came over, he would not be quite as friendly.
Listen, there's nothing more campy scary than singing like folk songs on a banjo.
Dio would never play a banjo. He would never play a banjo.
Are you sure about that?
I am 100% sure. You seriously think Dio would ever touch a banjo? He would be like, that's peasant shit.
I think that he would have a minion that's a banjo, and the banjo would have a stand that's, I don't know, maybe a horse or something.
A horse stand? No, yeah. Dio is a piano player, a grand piano player, and he plays like Chopin.
He plays Chopin, he plays Liberace. he's the piano man. That's what they call him, right?
Absolutely. Or, you know, I know you haven't watched Interview with the Vampire, but...
Actually, I had.
Oh, you did?
The first episode. I went and watched the first episode, like, as soon as I got home from watching Sinners. I like Sinners more.
You were like, I need more vampire?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, Southern vampires. That's a thing. That's a thing now. It's an established subgenre.
Hey, black Southern vampires, too.
Yeah.
You know, in the adaptation, he's black in that one, which is a great change, by the way. It really recontextualizes the entire story in a way that's better than the book.
One of the things that I really like about the show so far.
Yeah.
I'm not sold on the guy who plays Lestat yet compared to Tom Cruise.
Oh, I love him.
That's because Tom Cruise is a legitimate, like, insane, dangerous person. I can feel the, bloodlust coming off of his performance in earnest.
He is wild. Oh, he tweeted how much he liked Sinners, by the way, this weekend too. So I thought that was nice. It was nice of him. Well, with Mission Impossible, you know, right on the horizon.
Yeah.
But you know, Lestat in that, he obviously at the beginning he is a honky, but also he plays like honky tonk at the local brothel, which is, you know, very, very Sinners coded.
Yeah.
But as it goes along, he becomes like an 80s glam metal guy, which I think is so fucking cool.
Is accurate to the series, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever read all of those books, but
yeah, I did not read that far.
Yeah, no, he in Queen of the Damned, he's legit a goth rocker that like tours with The Cure and stuff.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, that is cool, and I'm very excited to see that in the show because the guy who plays Lestat, I do genuinely think he is really, really good. I think he is fantastic.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, he is so catty. It's great. It's great.
I mean, that is Lestat, the character, to a T. You know, he's just a big old bitch.
Yeah, you know what? If that guy told me that Dio was a big inspiration on his Lestat, I would believe it 100%.
Oh.
He has, like, a Dio affect.
Yeah, you think he has the aura?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I think he would make it, like, legit if they made a live-action... They have made a live-action JoJo.
They've made a couple live-action.
If they made more live-action JoJos, I think he would be a great Dio. He is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, sort of, like, aristocratic, like, freak. European freak. He's got all of it.
Well, I'm definitely going to check out more of the show. I like it so far. I was kind of iffy at the beginning with the recontextualization of... the recordings, you know, the actual interview with said vampire are like he's re-recording them in 2022 during COVID. I thought that was a little like, don't date yourself, man. Like, you don't need to do that.
I know. It is kind of in that period where they were like, well, we can't get around it. We got to just barrel through. Do you like that he's kind of doing like an Anthony Bourdain thing?
Yeah, that was my thought as well.
I know.
Like, oh, come on, the man's dead. You don't need to take shots at him like that.
I think he's good at it, though. I think he's actually really charming.
He's got the voice down. He's doing the Anthony Bourdain voice.
He is. And, you know, I like Christian Slater a lot, but he is not that character, I think.
No.
In that movie. I know he's only in for 2 seconds, but I think the guy playing it in the show is much better.
Yeah, I think he's fine. I like the show so far.
He's no Mr. Robot.
Hey. You leave, God, I wanted to call him Raffy. What's the actor's name?
You mean Rami Malek.
Yeah. Rami Malek.
Rami Malek recently snubbed from the Until Dawn movie.
I heard about that, yeah.
He aged out.
I also heard the Until Dawn movie isn't really an adaptation of the game, though.
Oh, man, I'm excited to see it, though. It's going to be trash. Absolute fucking trash, but I'm excited.
It was in development for like 4 years. That's not a good sign for a mid-budget horror movie.
Oh, no.
That's a video game adaptation.
There is zero chance of it ever being good. Like, even in the conception stage, there was zero chance. But that makes me more excited, you know?
Uh-huh. Anyway, what I was trying to get at before I got to the deal
of anime?
It all.
Right,
well,
anime, of
specifically
course, yes.
Manga. I have started reading the color editions of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure in anticipation of the Steel Ball Run season. Speaking of stuff that I should be catching up on, so that's what I've been reading. I'm like halfway through Battle Tendency right now. Beautiful stuff. Love it.
Oh, so you're not reading Steel Ball Run?
No, I'm. I got to work my way up.
You went all the way back.
I went all the way back.
Okay, well, you know, Steel Ball Run is widely considered in the fandom to be the best arc, so you should be excited.
Which is crazy because everything that I can see, that I encounter in JoJo always seems to be from the Joestar saga, but you know, people say that critically, Steel Ball Run's everyone's favorite, so I am looking forward to getting to it.
Well, hey, Johnny is a perfectly legitimate JoJo.
I'm trying. I have controversial opinions about
Johnny Joestar.
Well, about the setting change.
What, the Wild West?
Not specifically the genre or the actual setting. I think it's quite a decision to do the universal reset as a writing as a writing tool. That's JoJo season 6 was not my favorite ending of the JoJo seasons.
Well, I think that, again, that is one of the reasons that people like Steel Ball Run so much is we are freed from all the baggage of having to bring these characters back again. You know, obviously people love Jotaro. Obviously, he's the official mascot of all JoJo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good to be free of the Jotaro yoke, to go back to a pre-Jotaro age and redefine what a JoJo can be, you know?
Sure, and what if 2001 like kept going into a superhero movie about the Star Child at the end? Wouldn't that be cool?
And the Holy Corpse. I mean, goddamn, you could not get away with that in early JoJo.
Okay, collecting the parts of Jesus, that is, I do like
it's
that.
It's the most baller
also
shit.
Also making Jesus a stand user.
Yeah, it's the most baller shit ever. Like, honestly, it's like the most baller shit you can do with any piece of fiction. It'd be like, yeah, and then they're using Jesus Christ's knuckle bones to, like, level up. It's fucking awesome. And also, whenever the American president is the bad guy, like, it's just, oh, mwah, perfect.
That's why I'm very much looking forward to that game, American Showa story.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm still not convinced that's real. I mean, I'm really hoping, but it
the
looks...
The trailer is a fever dream, like, trying to describe it to somebody. Yeah.
It looks too good to be true.
It's like, all right, you play this
true.
Girl who has, like, a sensor, like a pixelated sensor always on her face, and she goes around the American Neo-West fighting the minions of the president. It's great.
Yeah. The Showa West.
Yeah. So that's been my recent forays into manga. Have you been reading anything?
Well, of course. I'm always of reading course. Things.
It's a foolish question, but I have to do it to set up the conversation, you see.
I've, you know, I'm reading all the regular stuff. I'm reading Chojin. I'm still reading that Love Eater Girls comic, which I just really like. I think it's really good. I love the whole deal.
Yeah, that's great. Great premise. That's been on my list for a while. You know, since we talked about it, at least.
It's wild. You should read it.
I love the anti-rom-com, like, anti-harem take. I think that's perfect.
Yeah. There's something about the split-tongue thing I just really like. The idea of constantly having to, like, almost like vampire bites on the neck to, like, constantly having to try to take a peek inside of somebody's mouth is really funny to me. But I'm reading all the regular stuff, After God, Chainsaw Man, Dan to Dan, which is in a weird spot, I have to admit.
Dan to Dan, well, both Dan to Dan and Chainsaw Man, I think, are maybe starting to feel the pressure of their own weight behind them. You know what I mean?
Yes, we are in spot. And
we've talked about it before on Chainsaw Man, but Dan to Dan is kind of getting to that stage as well.
We're in a place where there are a lot of characters in Dan to Dan. The cast is bloating up like crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and the same thing, obviously, with Spy Family, which I'm currently on. I'm all cut up, and it seems like they're finally trying to move in a, like, narrative direction, which I'm excited about. We'll see how that plays out. I've been really feeling like, man, talk about a stalled out series. But we'll see. You know, Kagurabachi's hit 77 chapters, and I'm starting to get kind of over it. I feel like at this point, it has just become the generic powers battle thing, and the premise has been left behind.
I mean, that's my biggest fear with any of these shonen stuff, especially, you know, jump titles.
Yeah, well, you know, I said at
but
the beginning,
that's their bread and butter. That's how they operate.
I know. Kagurabachi always felt like it was teetering on the edge of becoming generic, and now I feel like it is walking the tightrope so precariously. Still baffled at that this is the one that got all the hype. I mean, it's fine, but I don't know. It doesn't feel special in the way that something like Gachiakuta feels special, or even like Galaxias, which is the new one that's getting buzz, which I like much more. That's the one about people with dragon tails.
Yeah. I remember you talking about that one. I don't know. I think that our particular tastes, we are not, you know, Kadokawa's main money spending demographic that they're trying to cater to.
30-year-old white guys in America. Yeah, maybe not.
And two, people love edgy sword guys. That's just, it's a moneymaker. It'll always be a moneymaker.
It's true. People love edgy sword guys.
Especially if they have powers.
Especially if they have cool scars on their face.
And scars.
Sick-ass scars. But the main thing is that, and this is always heartbreaking whenever one of my series wraps up, but Natsume Arata getting married. Natsume Arata no Kekkon? Kekkon? Which I guess is marriage?
Oh, are you one of those guys where you can't like an idol if they're married? Is that what you're doing here? Is this a weird projection thing?
I like an idol more when they're married, because then it's like, okay, everybody calm down. All right. Well, calm down, guys.
Hey, I thought we were all here for the music. Come on,
yeah,
people.
Let's get it together, okay? Natsume Arata is was previously the running serialization by Nogizaka Taro, who did Yureito, which was one of my absolute favorite comics ever, which was that insane gender bender, kind of like almost urban legend-y Sherlock Holmes thing. Speaking of one of your shows you were mentioning earlier.
Yeah.
But it all about like this kind of trans man Sherlock Holmes and his like absolutely weirdo loser Watson in like a post-war Japan, traveling around trying to solve the mystery of like an inheritance. And it's just one of the most wild things I have ever read, and it is just really, really fucking great. And the amount of gender fuck that happens in that story, I think, is just extremely unique and in the field of manga in general.
Uh-huh.
But it is fantastic. And Natsume Arata is less daring in that way, but it is also very, very unique in the manga space. If you don't remember, this is the one about the child protective services guy. What do you call them? Cases? Clients? Cases, I guess.
Cases. Not clients. Yeah. They're not paying for his service.
they're not paying for his service. That's true. One of his cases is a boy whose father was murdered by what they call the Pierrot killer, which is this like this woman serial killer, right?
Okay.
It turns out that the kid was writing like letters back and forth with the woman. He goes like, to keep the kid away from the crazy serial killer, he goes like, okay, I'm going to go meet her and pretend I'm you. Like, I'll pretend like I was the one writing the letters. And if I talk to her, maybe I can help put all this to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can get her to like, you know, admit to the crimes and like reveal where she buried like your father, right?
Sure.
All that kind of regular kind of serial killer stuff. But when he gets there, in order to maintain contact, he has to pretend that they are lovers and that they're getting married.
Okay.
Because that's the only way to like talk to someone who's in prison, like if you're not their lawyer, right? Because she's on death row.
Only spouses and lawyers. You know, it's a ancient law going back thousands of years.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the entire thing becomes this insane cat and mouse game between them, where it's like they're both pretending to maintain this relationship, but it's like this constant play of love, but also danger. And it's about like what happened to her and how they feel about each other, which sounds maybe less viscerally exciting than it is portrayed in the manga, but it is fucking bonkers, and it's
okay.
Insanely compelling, and it's really good. I think Nogizaka Taro is also like one of the most unique artists working right now, so that's also like an absolute treat. But it did just wrap up, and it ended very abruptly, but I think it's satisfying enough that I can like fully wholeheartedly recommend reading this thing. Nice brisk 56 chapters. You can get through this in a weekend.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
Absolutely. And it is super worth it. But my heart breaks because this was one of my favorite series, and now it's over. Now I just have to read the other 15 things that I'm currently reading. including another series called MPD Psycho, that it is just straight up like a 90s grindhouse multiple personality detective story, which is just fucking just god, it's so 90s Fox primetime.
Hell yeah. Hey, we got some Prison Break going on here.
It is in the same vein where it's just like a fever dream bullshit. But yes, that's what I've been reading.
Okay. Well, I, other than JoJo, like I said, I have not been reading a lot of manga besides my standard stuff, which is mostly Dan to Dan.
And pervert shit.
Yeah, and a slew of pervert gyar shit.
And just your regular pervert shit.
Yeah. What I have been doing is continuing this show's mission of carrying on reviewing the shows of Spring 2025 in anime Spring 2025. As we all know, it is the season of the witch.
Season of the witch.
Just like Halloween 3. We're Halloween 3-ing all over the place, putting on those pumpkin masks.
Unfortunately, that it's not October, but I'm willing to overlook that minor discrepancy.
Yeah, coincidentally, another movie about evil Irish people.
That's true. I kind of assume like Australia, Japan has like a reversed schedule where October is like in the summer over there. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, they do a full on summerween kind of thing.
Summerween, exactly.
Yeah. So we've watched Witch Watch so far. There, Ichi the Witch is next season. That got a anime confirmation.
Yep. Yep, that's coming out. Also, another one that's like bafflingly popular to me.
Mm-hmm. And I went and checked out the first episode of Once Upon a Witch's Death. Now, before I get into this, I want to prime you with a question here. Are you familiar with the late 90s Nickelodeon live-action TV show 100 Deeds for Eddie McDowd?
Is that something that's similar to like My Name is Earl?
Kinda, yeah. It was about a 100 Deeds for Eddie McDowd was about a Stephen King bully, slick back hair, piece of shit, leather jacket wearing, like no good son of a bitch, going around kicking little kids and spitting on their ice cream and giving mean looks to old ladies.
Hell yeah,
you know, the whole gamut. The whole gamut.
The gamut. The whole gamut. Okay. Yeah. So what was the whole gamut?
Well, you see, he was such a piece of shit that he got cursed by literally God. So it is an explicitly Christian show.
God was cursing a lot of people in the 90s on TV. Yeah.
All over the place.
Yeah. You remember Early Edition?
Oh, yeah. Dude, do I remember Early Edition?
Edition, baby. Oh, that was a good one.
Get tomorrow's newspaper today. Yeah. Hell yeah.
What a weird curse. God is like up to freaky shit in the 90s.
The Early Edition guy, he was in those Godzilla movies, the new ones.
Was he?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, he played Millie Bobby Brown's dad. Anyway, 100 Deeds for Eddie McDowd was about a kid who got turned into a dog, and he had to do 100 good deeds in his town so that God wouldn't send him to hell.
Cool.
Basically.
And did he get adopted by like a hot woman who he had a crush on previously in his life?
No, you're thinking of Family Guy. I think you're thinking of the characters Brian and Lois from the Fox TV show Family Guy.
Wait, was Brian a dude who got turned into a dog?
No, I think he's just Seth MacFarlane's self-insert. Why Seth MacFarlane self-inserts as a dog that wants to fuck human women, that's a separate question. I don't think that we're qualified to tackle on this show.
You know, I miss the whole Family Guy thing. I don't know anything about it, so I am deeply unqualified.
So that was the setup for 100 Deeds for Eddie McDowd. Back to Once Upon a Witch's Death.
Oh, shit.
This is...
Right.
This is about a young 17-year-old witch who wakes up on her birthday. Her name is... Her name is Meg Raspberry, by the way. Love that name.
Meg Raspberry?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Great name. Top tier.
Meg Raz.
Yeah. She wakes up on her 17th birthday and the her teacher witch, the one of the seven most famous witches, the Magnificent Seven, if you will, basically calls her in and says, "Hey, happy birthday. By the way, someone cursed your family, and now that you're 17, the curse is activated for you, and you're going to die in 1 year.
What the fuck?
Nothing we can do about it. Sorry. In 1 year, you're going to get horrible Benjamin Button disease, and you're going to turn into, like, a 300-year-old crone and wither away and turn to dust in the matter of, like, a week. Sorry, okay. But that...
Okay. This is a hereditary curse?
They literally say the curse is congenital.
So, like that movie Hereditary?
Yeah, like that movie. No, that's not what that movie was about. Wait a minute.
Well, it was Hereditary.
It was Hereditary.
There was a whole family tree motif all the way through that movie.
No, I think that they literally say, hey, this curse is basically a disease that can't be treated with medicine or magic.
How did her parents have her then?
Well, we don't know. She was an orphan, you see. They got adopted by the best witch.
Okay, I have some serious questions about that.
It does seem a little bit suspicious when you put it like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't that weird? I don't know. It feels weird to me.
Also, how does she know her last name is Brasberry? Did the witch just make that name up?
It was tattooed on the bottom of her foot.
She was wearing a little ankle tag.
Yeah.
By the way, her master's name is Faust the Eternal. I just want to point that out.
Holy shit. That's heavy.
Yeah, Faust the Eternal Witch. And there are six other badass witches just like her, apparently. This is all set up. But the overarching hook of the show is that Meg, in order to cure her curse, because she can't break the curse herself because they don't know who gave her the curse or who gave her family the curse.
Sure.
And the magic is too powerful to break just with a counterspell.
Damn.
And so what she has to do is she has to go around and collect 100 tears of pure joy from people by doing good deeds around the world.
Okay. Being forced to do good deeds isn't always, like, you know, the best way to bring joy into the world, but, you know, it's not the worst either, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of hard because it's not just doing good deeds. This is really the crux of it. She has to do such a good deed that it makes one or multiple people cry.
Cry?
That's a bit harder, wouldn't you agree?
Why are there specific triggers to make a thing an official good deed? Like, what?
Well, because, you see, she has a...
What if you do a good deed?
She has a magic bottle, right?
Oh, no.
She has a magic bottle that when...
No, you're not telling me she collects tears, are you?
That's what I... Did you... No, you must have missed that part. Yes, no, to break the curse, she has to collect 100 tears of pure joy.
Oh, God. And she sips them from her liberal tears mug?
Yeah. Liberal, God. Non-witch, non-witch tears.
God damn it.
Now, I do want to... One thing that struck me about this setting, because, one, it is another... setting where witches are explicitly female and yet do not rule the world with an iron fist.
You do have a real problem with this.
If I was magic, I would be a bad person. I just want to point that out.
It is impossible for you to conceive a person who has magic powers that does not want to enslave humanity. You cannot imagine it. That is beyond the bounds of your imagination.
Are you telling me that they don't have at least one? It only takes one.
Only one. Hey, I mean, you could still shoot them, right?
Actually, that was kind of what I was steering towards, is that magic in this world is, like, not that much more convenient than just doing stuff, it seems. Or at least that it seems there is a huge imbalance between what magic can and cannot do.
Okay.
Because, like, for one, you know, the episode starts off with a scene of her making tea for herself. And instead of just, like, making a fire, because they do live in essentially a modern setting with modern amenities, like, there are gas stoves and electric kettles. There's electricity.
Sure.
But instead of just, like, making a hot cup of water, she uses, like, a minute long, she recites like a huge long spell to make the water hot. And it feels like it's not that much more convenient than just, you know,
turning the gas stove on.
Yeah. Than just turning the gas stove on and letting some water boil.
Yeah. Yeah. Or putting the electric kettle on.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. One of the people that she helps out in the first episode is a doctor who's got dead wife syndrome. He's got a wife who died. He was unable to save her with science magic, but also like magic cannot cure cancer either.
Well, then what good is magic if it can't cure cancer?
That's what I'm saying. But later in the episode, it goes on to prove that magic can teleport stuff. Like, she can just straight up make portals to the other side of the world and draw stuff through it.
Yeah, that's good. That is a good power.
That's a good power to have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you think that if you be teleporting stuff, you also be curing cancer.
If you can fold time and space to create a wormhole, as described in Event Horizon,
mm-hmm.
then you should be able to uncancerize cancerous cells.
At the very least, you should be able to teleport them out of a body, right?
But you have to. The body does need the cells. I mean,
I'm pretty
you could
sure
teleport the tumor out.
Yeah,
you could teleport that out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But apparently, magic can't do that.
Nope, got to cut them open. hey, do you remember I told you about that Dr. Isekai?
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. About going to the magical world and curing the common cold.
Yeah, exactly. They teleport tumors out.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that show obviously has a better grasp of how magic should be used than Once Upon a Witch's Death.
Yeah, also better grasp on medical science.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think it's weird to set up this show that is, you know, basically the premise is a girl trying to learn transactional philanthropy, you know?
Yep.
Is not wanting to die a horrible Benjamin Button death, does that make the actions themselves pure? Is a good action good by itself, regardless of the motivation of the person who did it?
Okay, so now you're dragging up that old canard about, you just want to do good to make yourself feel better. And is that really good? Is that really selflessness? To which I say, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It doesn't matter whether you do good for the wrong reasons. Doing good is just doing good. All the other shit is dumb. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're doing good for God coins, who gives a shit? You're still doing good.
Fair enough. I mean, I see the logic in that in putting a net good back into the world.
Yeah.
I object to having to specifically do stuff on the level of making the recipients cry from joy. Because doesn't that mean, you know, just strategically, she would be avoiding minor acts of good to only go after the high payout stuff.
You do have to go for the high payout. Yeah, especially with the clock ticking behind you. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You're avoiding a lot of minor good to do big major good.
Also, what's up with not telling her about the curse that starts when she's 17? Not telling her until she turns 17. That seems a bit messed up, right?
It seems messed up also that she didn't do anything to deserve being cursed, and yet God still allows her to be cursed.
Well, that's because God hates witches. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, God hates witches. Oh, okay. Well, then it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what the witch hunts were about, right?
Right.
God really hates witches.
Their manipulation of reality spits in the face of his omnipotence. Right. Yes, I forgot. Briefly forgot about that. You're right.
So narratively, you know, just as a show, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you look at it through a, you know, trad Catholic lens, like I do all things, I think it's a perfect setup.
Yeah.
I hope that witch dies.
from the tone of the first episode, at least, do you think it's the kind of show that like your Neggy Posse Angler would just snuff her out at the end?
No, I don't think so. I think that this is very much going more for a, I don't want to say gag kind of setup, although she is, you know, categorically like an unserious character. She takes the news of her impending death very much as an inconvenience to her, like, being able to do fun witch stuff, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And I suppose that's why she didn't find out until she was 17, because her witch teacher straight up says, like, yeah, if I had told you last year or the year before that, like, you were just a dumbass 15-year-old, you wouldn't have cared. You barely care now. And she's like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And teenagers don't believe in death.
It's true. You know, they have such a low threshold for what constitutes, or a high threshold for what constitutes a mortal danger to themselves.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit.
They don't really believe in it.
Yeah.
Okay. What about the animation?
It was okay. You know, it's not the worst thing I've seen. It's actually probably on the better end of stuff being animated in this season. I just don't like the character designs. They're incredibly generic.
Mm.
I don't know exactly what to compare it to. Almost
compare it to Witch Watch.
Oh, it is nowhere near as good looking as Witch Watch is.
No, that's disappointing.
I know. Witch Watch may actually be like one of the better looking thing, one of the best looking things of this season. That and Lazarus. I just wish that their stories were not like, you know, cold oatmeal in how much they interest me.
Yeah, well, you know, the reverse harem thing could be a little more exciting, but maybe when they introduce a couple more boys, the story will pick up.
Yeah, maybe. So, you know, in terms of which anime is the one to watch, I would say Witch Watch is on top so far in this competition, but we still have a couple more witch shows to go.
Yeah, it's a shame the Gundam this season isn't Witch from Mercury, because it would slot directly in there.
If it was Witch from Mercury, it would be taking all of the cake. You know, it would be kicking asses left and right. But
Witch from Mercury is pretty good.
Yeah, it's bygone. You know, it's last week's news at this point. So now we got to watch Witches with Witch Watch and Once Upon a Witch's Death and the Witches of Eastwick.
Yeah, the Mayberry Witches, Maybelline Witches, Maboroshi Witches. Fuck.
Maboroshi Witches.
Maboroshi Witches. let's just call the two girls in G-Cucks Witches.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, they're witches now. In
they're
that case,
witches.
G-Cucks is winning.
I think a new type is so similar to a witch that, fuck it, who cares?
All right, have you watched anything?
Yes, I did watch something. I managed to slip something in between White Lotus episodes. I threw on Yaiba.
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 The lesser known of the works from the Detective Conan guy.
Gosho Aoyama, yes. Though Yaiba was also, you know, pretty popular because people like samurai and they like plucky kids being samurai.
I mean, I suppose.
I mean, so the Yaiba himself is basically a Gon type, you know? So, I mean, he is built in the popularity mode. Yaiba itself, though, unlike Hunter x Hunter, is juvenile, I suppose.
Well, it's a kids show, you know. It's
a kids show.
I saw a little bit of it, some clips, and it's, you know, about a cute little samurai boy, you know, who goes to the city and he wants to fight people, right? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so Yaiba himself was raised by his samurai dad deep in a jungle without any contact with the outside world.
Ascetic style.
Well, you know, kind of hermit on the mount, I suppose. He's training to be a seinen, except being a seinen in this case is being a samurai. Whatever he thinks a samurai is, I'm still a little confused on that.
I mean, is it a modern day setting?
Yeah, it's modern day setting.
So I feel like maybe samurai is not so much of a classification anymore.
I think whenever he sees a guy in a kimono with a practice sword, he just assumes that's what a samurai is.
So just a sword guy, basically.
A sword guy. Any sword guy. Yeah.
Any sword guy, a samurai.
Any sword guy, a samurai. Every time he sees something that even looks like a sword, he's like, I think that's a samurai.
You got samurai out here?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, what is a modern samurai? It's just a guy with a sword, right?
Wait, does that make me a samurai? I own a sword.
You own a sword? Is it a two-handed sword?
It's a three-handed sword.
It's a three-handed sword?
Yeah, it's one of them bastard swords.
Yeah, you're a berserker then.
A claymore.
Berserkers can't be samurais.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, that is what Berserk taught me.
Guts isn't a samurai.
No, but samurais can be vagabonds.
Absolutely. Well, that's a ronin. Let's get that clear.
All right.
Vagabonds are ronin.
Okay, all right.
Yaiba is not yet a samurai, but he's also not a ronin. He's a little child who carries around a practice sword and just hits basically anybody he wants with it.
Oh, so he's a punk. He's just a little son of a bitch.
Yeah, because he doesn't really know anything about society. So there's a lot of like culture clash humor in it, and which is mostly harmless, except that he does tend to molest every girl he sees, which
I find to be
yeah, very uncomfortable for a kids show.
Okay,
you know, he walks in, there's one girl, there's like a heroine, and within like the first 15 minutes of the show, he does sneak in on her while she's like changing in a locker room.
Classic.
Yeah.
I don't like it, but classic move.
I guess not sneak, he just goes in there.
Oh, he just walks in.
Yeah, and then he wolf whistles at her.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, fish out of water kind of character setup, where you have a Goku, a martial arts kid who has no... context for the great world, the greater societies of the world.
Yeah,
outside of his little training regiment, is there anything that this does better than what like Ranma One Half did with this setup? Because it sounds like Ranma One Half, but without the fun like gender bending stuff and more just being a little weirdo creep who spies on girls where they're changing.
No, I mean, it doesn't do anything better than Ranma in any way. Ranma fucking rules, and Yaiba's just kind of the same gag over and over again, where he wants to hit strong people with his sword, and he doesn't really understand social conventions, so he tends to just wander around hitting people with his sword.
Yeah, it sounds like he was really, the author was really putting in his B-plot effort on this one compared to Detective Ronan, or Detective Conan.
Detective Ronan.
Yeah.
Detective Rodan.
I'd read the shit out of that.
Yeah, that would be pretty rad. There is an entire plot, I mean, this thing did run for a long time. There is an overarching plot where there's a destiny sword and there's like a fated rival, and the fate of the world is at stake at some point, but it's not really that important at the beginning of the series. This beginning of the series is just this kid hitting people with his sword and not knowing what women are.
Huh.
It's pretty much it.
Yeah, you think it'd be a pretty important thing for his dad to teach him. I think that's one of those things dads are supposed to teach their kids.
His dad is a piece of shit. So his dad is
okay, that makes sense.
He is an absolute fucking loser. His dad immediately dumps him on some random guy and then splits as soon as he gets to the city. Yeah.
What a dog.
Yeah, he fucking sucks. He is the very definition of a deadbeat. But he's good with a sword, so Yaiba still looks up to him.
Well, sword guys are king, I gotta say. Nothing beats a good sword guy.
You know, in the world of samurai, a sword guy is king. Hard to argue with that.
All right. Let's wrap up with the last thing that I watched for this week, which was just baffling, to be honest, the more it unveiled itself as I watched the episodes.
Yeah.
So I've been on a Sherlock Holmes kick, so this one caught my eye. This is the Mononoke case logs of Chizunji Sensei, : he just solves all the mysteries. He just solves them. He solves the mysteries.
That's the name of the show? He just solves all the mysteries?
He just solves all the mysteries. That's name of the show, yeah.
That's in the title of the show? He just solves all the mysteries?
Yep, they're laying it all out front. Yeah, this is a mystery show, episodic mystery show about a detective, and he solves them. Boy, howdy, does he solve all the mysteries.
He solves all of them. One at a time or just in one go?
Well, so Watson style, these are being presented in past tense of an older Detective Chizunji looking back on the memoirs of his life and recounting these tales to the viewer, in the form of diary entries, thus the Mononoke case logs in the title.
I see. Okay.
I don't know if he put in the subtitle himself of he just solves all the mysteries.
He just solves all the mysteries.
It seems a bit self-serving, you know, if you ask me.
It's Journey.
Yeah, it is Journey. It's Journey.
It's Journey. It's mystery.
he solves them all. So first thing that struck me is like, oh, this is an interesting choice, was it takes place in the 23rd year of the Showa era, which I don't know about you. I don't know how up to date you are on your Japanese history, but I had to do some math there and look up some stuff. And It is post-war Japan, and when I say that, it
which
is...
Which war?
The big one.
Oh, the really big one.
The WW World War Tattoo.
I know, Battle of Sekigahara.
Uh-huh.
The Russo-Japanese War. The big one.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mysteriously Japan decided to stop doing war after that one.
Well, and then the one where they beat up all the college kids, and then I think that brings us up to date.
Yeah. This takes place in 1949.
Wow.
So quite literally right after the World War
II. Right after. Okay, gotcha. People are still really bummed out.
And it centers around our central character, who is a Sherlock Holmes. He's a Sherlock Holmes type. Notably, not the cool drug-doing type. He is not doing cocaine or opium or any of the fun stuff.
They can't keep getting away with this. They cannot keep getting away with this. If you're going to do Sherlock Holmes, you got to do the whole thing.
You got to do the whole thing.
I'm tired of this.
Walking pharmacology. He's in there making his own drugs sometimes.
I don't care if you're a Ron Kamanahashi or you're a Kendaichi, any of these guys. Walk the walk, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of this.
And he is the new Japanese literature teacher at the local high school in Saitama Prefecture.
Okay.
Now, he is really more of a co-protagonist or maybe even a deuterogonist because the central plots of each episode are kind of centered around the various school like myths and ghost stories that you see pop up a lot. You know, smiling lady, ghost in the library.
Slipmouth woman.
Yeah, slipmouth woman.
Hanako-kun.
Yeah, toilet paper ghost.
Toilet paper ghost?
Yeah. Yeah, you've never heard about that one? The red paper, blue paper?
No, I thought you just meant Hanako.
No, there's multiple toilet ghosts, as we come to find out.
I hate this. I hate this.
And so the game loop, if you will, is a ghost story, rumor, what have you, urban legend will pop up at this school. They make a note of saying that the main female lead is one of his students, and she is a second year high schooler in the sense that this is the second year that Japan has had like a Western style, like school, like public school system.
Quite literally second year. Yes. Got yeah.
And he will go about investigating this rumor, this ghost story at the school, prove that it is some kind of either exaggeration or a trick of the eye. He will Reddit Fedora tier logic his way out of anything.
He's just looking at things going swamp gas.
Yes, exactly. But here's the hook is that he believes all of his students are such dum-dums that they need these myths or else they're going to go like full socialist, like logic brain. they'll fall to communism without their local folklore.
I see. He's afraid of ripping the whimsy out of these children who have just survived a horrific war.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And so that's where our female lead comes in, who acts as his Watson, more or less, except that instead of chronicling his, his mysteries, her job is to pretend to be a paranormal investigator / exorcist so that when the ghosts disappear, there is a reason for the students to latch on to as to why the ghosts are no longer there. And that is because she exercised them with her ghost powers.
Oh, she's an onmyoji.
Yes.
Cool.
But not a real one. He just tells people that she is to explain away why the ghost stories stopped happening.
Gotcha. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Kind of, it sounds charming in its own way.
I wish I could say something other than like it's not very inspired. It has the potential to be very charming, to be funny, to do like gags.
Sure.
It doesn't. It plays everything mostly very straight for the most part, except like it's one concept of a joke so far seems to be people being like like, hey, you're that really cool ghost exercising student, right? You've got to help me. And she'll have some kind of personal, like, oh, it's so tough pretending to be a paranormal investigator / exorcist. I wish people would just understand that it's the teacher doing all of this stuff.
Gotcha.
But I have to keep up this charade.
It's not that hard, though, right?
No, it's not that hard. It seems like a pretty sweet deal. People, like, you know, give her privileges and stuff.
Yeah.
I'd keep up the grift, you know.
Yeah, it's not like she's not actually doing Witcher shit. She's just standing around next to the guy who's doing all the stuff, right?
Exactly, yeah. And then at the end, he just says, yeah, she did it. She exercised the ghost or whatever.
That is a sweet gig.
Well, I mean, it would be if you paid her, but you're not allowed to pay students or, as an adult male teacher, hang out with them at school after dark.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah. So what role does the American occupation play in all this?
Well, other than vague references to how the school system was, like, implemented, we have not seen any American occupation.
Interesting. Oh, interesting. Okay.
I am waiting for the episode where someone asks her to do a seance for all the people that died in Hiroshima.
Oh, Jesus.
I have a feeling that maybe they're not trying to be maybe they're not trying to go there, as it were, you know?
And yet they constantly revisit this era.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So, yeah. So, like, the first mystery is a rumor of the library ghost, where everyone in school is talking about how if you go there after dark, you see a ghost walking into the wall next to the library.
Right. Yeah, and that's Slimer.
Yeah, well, turns out, it's our guy, Chiunji Sensei. He was the library ghost all along, because
he has Slimer?
Well, he ain't sliming nobody. Thank God.
Oh, thank God. Oh, yeah. Thank God. Thank God it's not one of those.
No, turns out students go back to school at night to make out or whatever, and they see him walking into his secret door office. You see, he has a secret door office where the door is like a false panel to the wall next to the library, so that he can go there and be undisturbed to do all of his Sherlock Holmes, hard-thinking TM.
Teachers should not have secret rooms at schools. That is so bad. That is not okay.
Well, he explains it because the Japanese literature teacher that was at this school before him was harboring subversive material, banned books that the imperial government didn't want people to have.
Uh-huh.
And so he would hide them in the secret office, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and there's a button at the bottom of the desk that locks the door, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. You know, there is kind of a currently a spat of, like, urban legend focused manga.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kind of like a big resurgent thing where, like, just kind of a weekly, like, here's the seven school wonders stories, right? Or, like, here's the story about the kids looking for the man-faced dog or whatever. I'm reading, yeah, like, a bunch of them that do this shit. You know, I told you about the Urban Legend Files, right? Where,
yeah,
it's exactly the opposite of this premise, basically.
Where it's proving that they're all real?
Well, it's the reverse Sherlock in this one is the kid whose mere presence proves all of the urban legends are real. But he hates that shit, so he goes out of his way to convince everyone that they're not real and that he doesn't want to have anything to do with them. But, like, the girl who's obsessed with urban legends constantly coerces him into joining her so that the urban legends will happen to them.
I see.
But he hates it. He fucking hates it. But he's a deadbeat asshole who's constantly wasting all of his money at, like, Mahjong and pachinko parlors. So all she has to do is, like, throw him a 20 and he'll do whatever she says.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just a series of those things.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's a weird setup, especially to have it take place specifically in, like, very, very post-war Japan, 1949, and to not go into any of that, like, actual setting to play off of.
It's pretty weird.
It seems, Yeah, it seems weird. It seems a lot of burying your head in the sand kind of energy going on here. Don't look at the military bases. Don't look at the planes. We're just talking about yokai.
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand why you would choose that era.
Mm-hmm.
Of all time periods. Am I missing something? I don't know.
I think maybe it more has to do, if I had to take a guess, it has to do that all of the mysteries, all of the ghost stories they're addressing are stuff that is very specific to like a school setting. You know, there's a whole subgenre of Japanese ghost stories specifically centered around taking place at the high school. Like,
yeah, the seven wonders of the school.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what Hanako-kun is all about, is exactly Except they're all real in that.
And so what I think they're doing is by setting it in the very beginning of what we consider the Japanese school system, like in its very earliest iterations, it's trying to do a coy little like, this is where all the urban legends originally came from.
Huh.
And even though none of them were real, this is where they all originated, you know?
You know what? I appreciate, actually, with that context, I do appreciate that. I didn't think about it that far, but yeah, that's not bad. I actually kind of like that. I just wish, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on.
You know, I just wish that he used his amazing Sherlock Holmes powers to solve crime instead of ghost stories.
Yeah. You know, it's just there's a lot of stuff, especially, you know, I mean, we do it all the time, right? There's so many times where we have stories like set in the South. You know, there's speaking of sinners, there's no mention of sharecropping or the Klan or anything. It's just conspicuously absent. It's just like, okay, all right, guys, I get it. Sure, whatever.
So I don't know. In conclusion, I think that my recommendation would be go watch Sinners. That movie kicked ass.
Yeah. Go watch Sinners. That fucking ruled. It was great.
Yeah, don't watch anime this week. Go watch Sinners.
Go watch Sinners. It doesn't even take that long.
Like 2 hours. You'll like it. You'll love it.
Is it 2 hours?
It's a little over 2 hours. It's like 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh, well, that's too long.
Could have been 90.
You know what? Honestly, I will say, could have cut the last bit where Michael B. Jordan shoots the big gun. I didn't need that.
You know, I was saying the exact same thing after we got out of the theater.
Yeah.
I understand thematically, like, it's a fun moment. It's a fun set piece. I think it could have, I don't think it fit in as a greater part of the movie, but I could be wrong, you know?
I think he has it in the contract, Michael B. I think he has it in the contract that at some point in every movie he's in,
he's got to shoot the big gun.
He has to shoot a big gun in slow motion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, I mean, have you ever shot a gun in slow motion? It's awesome.
Not yet, but I'm working my way up to it by shooting them in real time. And then I'll get used to that. Then I'll do the slow motion.
Listen, we got to keep spitting facts before we can start shooting guns. That's all I'm saying.
I shot guns way before I spit facts. I did it backwards. I shot guns while I was still spitting bullshit.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
That's the American way.
Well, unless you have anything else, is that it for this week?
Read Urban Legend Files. It's good.
Yeah, read Urban Legend Files.
It's good.
Watch Sinners.
I love, you know, we have so few manga and anime where the main character is like a fucking dirtbag college kid who wastes all his money playing mahjong and like smoking and like skipping class and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I love that kind of guy.
Hell yeah.
We don't have enough of those guys. So read Urban Legend Files.
Yeah, slack off and read Urban Legend Files. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and get hype for the new Final Destination.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Tony Todd's last film appearance. RIP.
Yeah. In his most iconic role.
All right, beautiful, handsome, tall listeners. That's it for this week. Go check out the TikTok. Check out the Instagram. Message us. Comment us. We love it. We'll answer.
Do whatever.
We're here for that stuff. And until next week.
See sinners.
Bye.
I'm actually kind of heartbroken because this is like one of the best things that's running right now, and I don't even know what I'm gonna read now. I mean, you know, besides Dan to Dan and Die Dark and Chojin X and Chainsaw Man and Tengoku Daimakyo, After God, Dear Shimazaki and the Peaceful Land, Tower Dungeon's pretty fucking good, Sensei Kyoshitsu, Seishun Bakusho, Rai Rai Rai, Summer Hikaru Died, whose anime is premiering next season, Phantom Busters, Galaxias, Stellar Friends, Pumpkin Knight, Star Strike It Rich, Free Run's on hiatus, but it'll come back. Yeah, besides those, I don't really know what I'm gonna do.